seems like they have a lot of evidence that something is happening with these abductions.
Yeah, there are over 1,000 cases on record now.
Over 1,000?
Yeah.
I mean, these people are having support groups and stuff now. There are so many of them.
Yeah. Here in Alexandria, Virginia, where I live now, I work with a nonprofit scientific group called the Fund for UFO Research. And I have been getting, on the average, one call a week from someone who thinks he or she is the victim of one of these abduction experiences. Others in the field are getting more and more and more reports of this sort of thing. Very consistent reports. The mental health community, psychologists, psychiatrists, are getting...
Good evening, Cincinnati. I'm Chris.
And I'm Rob.
And together,
we're the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show.
And guess what?
What?
I believe in UFOs.
Who doesn't?
Everybody does. There ain't a skeptic out there, is there?
Probably not. Not with an earshot.
Not with all these government conspiracies and cover-ups going on. I mean, if they're covering up, the Whitewater and the Iran-Contra and the Watergate, they got to be covering up the UFO thing, too.
You think? You think maybe the government would lie to us?
I know so.
You're not suggesting that the government would lie to us.
Well, they might be.
You cynic. Well, we've got a guy on the phone all the way from Iowa, and this guy's an expert about UFOs
and possibly even government cover-ups. Are there government cover-ups? His name is Captain Kevin D. Randall. Are you there, Kevin?
I'm absolutely here.
Should I call you Captain Randall?
Or you can call me Kevin.
How about Cappy?
That would work, too. whatever it takes.
All right.
Tell him to talk louder.
Speak up, Captain.
I'm doing my best.
Okay, thank you. And you, along with another gentleman, Donald Schmidt, are the authors of a very recently released book called The Truth About the UFO Crash at Roswell, and it's supposed to have the latest findings.
Absolutely.
What the heck is the Roswell? What the heck is the UFO crash at Roswell?
I think basically it's a UFO crash at Roswell.
Pretty self-explanatory, huh?
Well, where is Roswell?
It's in New Mexico, although I believe there is one in Ohio.
And when did that crash happen?
It happened on July 4th, 1947.
What crashed there?
As near as we can tell, based on the eyewitness testimony, first-hand testimony, the people who saw the thing, an alien spacecraft.
So it's not just a bunch of Air Force guys celebrating Independence Day a little bit too hard?
No, actually the Air Force didn't exist in July of 1947.
The Army Air Corps.
Actually, it was the Army Air Forces in July of 47.
Either way, how do you know it wasn't a Roman candle?
Because Roman candle would have burned up, and we've got eyewitness testimony from a number of people who were there and told us that it looked like basically a heel of a shoe, about 25, 30 feet long.
Well, basically, could you start at the beginning of the story? What kind of night was it? Who was there? What happened? And what's happened since?
In 30 seconds or less.
You can take your time telling us, but I want you to, make it, tell us a story.
Give us the Reader's Digest version.
No, go into detail.
But don't leave anything out. If you contradict me again, I'm going to kick your ass.
I'll kick your butt.
Sorry, I didn't want you to hear that, but go ahead.
I heard it anyway. This story starts like every science fiction movie you've ever seen.
Then how can we know it's true?
Because we've got the eyewitness, the people who were there telling us.
So Lon Chaney was in New Mexico?
No, what we have is a man and a woman out in the desert where they're not supposed to be, drinking a few beers.
Yeah, that's how all UFO sightings get started.
Object flashes overhead, crashes into the ground. They go down that night to take a look at it, but their batteries are weak and their flashlight. They retreat to their campsite. Next morning, the Air Force, the Army Air Force, shows up in force with a bunch of trucks and vehicles to retrieve this object that they now can see crashed into the ground. Looks sort of like the heel of a shoe, a lifting body, if you will. There are bodies associated with it. The military comes in, cordons off the area.
What do you mean bodies? You mean alien bodies?
Alien bodies, the flight crew, if you will.
Wow.
Cordons off the area.
Hold on. Did they find out what meal they were serving on that flight?
No, they did not.
Okay, go ahead.
But they had the area cordoned off, military guards around there stopping traffic. A group of archaeologists, Dr. W. Curry Holden from Texas Tech is there. He sees it. He tells me himself just before he died that he was there. He saw it all, saw the craft and the bodies.
Did you meet him?
Curry Holden?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Did he seem like a pretty straight fella?
He did. He was elderly when I met him. He was 96 years old.
Wow.
But his story is corroborated by other people. The couple, Jim Ragsdale, for example, very nice fellow, lives in Roswell, New Mexico, now has throat cancer. We've been talking to him for about 2 years. Lewis Rickett, counterintelligence NCO from the Roswell Army Airfield, described the scene to us. Major Edwin Easley, the provost marshal at the Roswell Army Airfield, told us about the cordon that goes up and the fact that the craft was extraterrestrial in origin. We've got a great deal of eyewitness testimony now.
But do you have any pieces of it?
No, I do not. If we did, we wouldn't have to have this discussion based on eyewitness testimony, because we'd have the material in the laboratory and we would have probably the proof we needed to...
Okay, well, you said the Air Force went and collected the material and even some bodies maybe. What the heck did they do with it?
They picked up the craft, they picked up the bodies. The bodies were flown out the next night, went to Andrews Army Airfield, now Andrews Air Force Base in Washington, D.C., for the high-ranking government officials to see it, and then they went to Wright-Patterson, actually Wright Field in Dayton, Ohio.
Is it still there?
Best information we have is that the stuff has been moved into Nevada.
Wow. Gambling with it, huh?
Well, there's gambling. We have more forms of gambling in Iowa than they do in Nevada. So they could have brought it to Iowa if they wanted to gamble with it, I suppose.
Why is the Roswell case more important than other UFO sightings, other UFO abduction stories, and other reports of UFO crashes?
It's the best documented. We have the most eyewitness testimony, we have the most documentation, we have the most information about it.
How many eyewitnesses do you have?
To the entire event, we've talked to more than 500 people who were involved in some fashion, conducting in excess of 2,000 interviews. Now, granted, not all of those saw the craft and bodies. There's three dozen witnesses who only saw bits of debris, and they described this foil-like material that you could wad it up to into a ball, drop it on the floor, and it would unfold itself with no sign of a crease. We've got three dozen people who handled debris from the craft at various points, both military and civilian witnesses. We have six firsthand witnesses on the impact site that saw the craft and the bodies. We have other witnesses that were involved in other aspects of it, taking the material out of the Roswell Army Airfield, for example. We have a large number of what we call first and second-hand witnesses. Glenn Dennis, the Roswell mortician, is both a first and second-hand witness. He saw material, he was involved in the story, and a friend of his, a nurse, told him about the body. So he's second-hand to the bodies, but first-hand to many of the events at the Roswell Army Airfield. Bill Brazel, the same way. His father told him about the events, and Bill Brazel himself handled some of the debris.
Well, if all these people have seen either the debris, or they've heard firsthand testimony of the bodies, or the debris, or the crash, why isn't this more widely known? I mean, why didn't it get play in the press when it happened?
It did. It was in all the newspapers when it happened, and within 3 hours, the military announced that it was nothing more than a Rawin target balloon.
What's a Rawin target balloon?
It's a radar. It's a balloon that carries a radar reflector aloft. And they said that the officers at Roswell was so caught up in the flying saucer hysteria of the time that they mistaken this Rawin target balloon for something extraterrestrial.
So did it ever get into print? Or, well, I guess they didn't really have TV news then. Did it ever make the radio news that
Absolutely.
A UFO landed, or did it ever make a newspaper?
Yes. In fact, the Roswell Daily Record has a headline that says, Roswell Army Airfield captures flying saucer and ranch in the region. So yes, it made the newspapers. It was in all the newspapers.
What about like the New York Times or Washington Post or LA Times?
Absolutely. The story was there. What they printed, though, was the follow-up story that after it had been identified as something mundane. We have a radio report from ABC News. I think it's the 10 o'clock edition of the news, so you can hear the newscasters interviewing or talking about what Roger Ramey, the commander of the 8th Air Force, said. So all that stuff was out. The problem we run into now is this is such an incredible story that people don't want to believe it. So it's sort of a self-keeping secret. I come to you and I say, well, there was a crashed flying saucer and dead alien bodies, and your immediate reaction is kind of laugh and scoff at it because it's such an incredible story. And that was part of the problem we've had. If it hadn't crashed near Roswell, New Mexico, Roswell being the site of the only nuclear strike force in 1947, had Mac Brazel, the rancher who found some of the debris, not gone to Roswell but gone to Albuquerque instead, the whole UFO phenomena, the history of the phenomena, may have been different.
What did these aliens' bodies look like?
They were have been described as 4.5 feet tall, heads slightly larger than a human head would be, no hair, the eyes only slightly larger, not the big black orbs that we see from the abduction phenomena, but eyes that are just slightly larger than human eyes, with pupils. The bone structure has been said to be very thin, like bird bones. The fingers are very long and slender.
So my girlfriend could be an alien.
If that's what she looks like.
Yeah, it sounds pretty frightening.
Is it a coincidence, or do these sound like science fiction movie aliens to me?
You have to remember that these aliens, the descriptions came about before the science fiction movies. People saw these things before the science fiction movies.
So the science fiction movies were based on the descriptions that these people at Roswell gave?
Not necessarily the people at Roswell, but a lot of the science fiction movies that we see, the information encompassed in the movies is based on the reports from the UFO phenomenon. So there is some of that going on.
Let's get in a little bit of your background, Captain Kevin. Where'd you come from? What led you to write this book?
I grew up in Colorado, flew helicopters for the Army for 4 years with a tour in Vietnam, spent 12 years in Air Force Intelligence. My partner, Don Schmidt, from the Center for UFO Studies, was looking into the idea of the Roswell case not having been sufficiently investigated in 1988, and invited me to join the investigation because there was a large number of potential witnesses with military backgrounds, thinking that my background in the military would provide me with insights that maybe civilians who had not served on active duty may not have. So he invited me to participate in the investigation. In 1980, I was clearly on record in a book called The Encyclopedia of UFOs saying there's no such thing as hidden. So I came into the investigation as a skeptic, and it wasn't until we had made a number of trips to New Mexico that we realized that it was the potential for a book there, because we were turning up a lot of information that had not been published.
So you've done a complete 180 since 1980, huh?
Absolutely.
Now you think that there are bodies and there was a crash?
There is no doubt in my mind, and it's based on talking to the people who were involved in the recovery operation, the archaeologists, the military people, the civilians who were involved in this, who have seen these sorts of things. So yes, I'm convinced based on the testimony.
Okay, how big of a time lapse was there after the crashers land, after the saucer crashed, and then before the Air Force got there?
The best information we have is it crashed between 11:17 and 11:27 p.m. on July 4th, and that the military began the recovery operation after sunrise on the 5th. So,
did any farmers or any hillbillies or ranchers get out there before the Air Force?
We have the couple who was out there. We have the archaeological team who was out there, and we think that the archaeological team may have led the Air Force back into the site. So there are civilians involved in it as well. The majority of our information comes from military sources, but we do have three civilian sources who were on the site and provided us with additional data.
Well, whenever any kind of military operation is undertaken, there are just tons of paperwork and forms filled out. Have you gotten your hands on those?
We have very limited documentation, and the problem is all this documentation would be classified, and it's still classified. And if you use a FOIA request in an attempt to gather classified...
A what request?
A FOIA, I'm sorry, Freedom of Information request. You send the government a request for specific information, and if it's classified, they tell you it's classified and that you can't have it, and you're forced to file an appeal. If they reject the appeal, then your next course of action is to sue them in a court.
Yeah, go for it. Did you do it?
We don't have that kind of money.
What about our congressional hearings?
There have been congressional hearings, and there have been suits filed. And when the suits have filed, things have turned up that are interesting. A FOIA request was made by Citizens Against UFO Secrecy to gather documents from the FBI. And what turned up in one of the FBI documents is a handwritten note by J. Edgar Hoover in July of 1947, where Hoover, the FBI is requested by the Air Force to investigate the backgrounds of people who cite UFOs. And I think Clyde Tolson endorsed it, saying we should do this. And Hoover, in a handwritten note, says he would go along with it, but before the FBI agreed to it, they must be granted access to all disks recovered. So there is some documentation suggesting something was going on. There are other documents that don't relate specifically to Roswell, but show a pattern of government secrecy in the UFO phenomenon. For example, UFO researchers have said for years that there was a secret investigation, not Project Blue Book that took place at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, which everybody knows about, but a secret investigation. We now, because of documentation, can prove that there was a secret investigation. It was headquartered at Fort Belvoir, Virginia, and it was run by the 4602nd Air Intelligence Service Squadron, which eventually evolved into the 1127th Air Activities Group. We can now prove that because of the documentation we have.
Wow, so why does the government want to cover anything up? I mean, if the government covers up Whitewater or Watergate or how many dead are in Vietnam, they have a darn good reason. Why would they care that something wrecked out in the sticks in New Mexico?
What happens if you can understand how that craft operates? Suddenly you've been presented with a technology that is far superior to anything on the planet Earth. And if you can exploit that technology, that puts you in a position of power.
So we wouldn't let the Russians in on it?
We didn't want the Russians in on it. I think what they decided to do, if you can convince somebody something didn't happen, then you don't have to worry about them spying on you because they're not going to be looking for it. And I think that was part of the reason. I think another part of the reason was in 1962, for example, the Brookings Institution made a study of what would happen if there was contact between people of Earth and an alien intelligence, not necessarily a face-to-face confrontation, but through radio astronomy and of the disciplines such as economics, theology, anthropology that were questioned about this. 14 of the 15 disciplines said it would be disastrous for our civilization. I think also we've got a problem with once something is classified, it's very difficult to get it declassified. And finally, what we know about the events that took place in Roswell, The government came in and threatened people. They told the sheriff that if he talked about it, they would kill him. They told the mortician that he'd be picking his bones out of the sand. And I think that part of the civil rights violations that took place in 1947, they're also trying to keep under wraps.
Is there any truth to the rumor that there is a top secret extraterrestrial airport in Alaska that the Russians have been spy satellite photographing since the early 60s?
Not that I'm aware of. It sounds like a very good rumor.
All right, now, we're seeing reports in the press about an alien meeting with Ross Perot and meeting with Bill Clinton, and recently this alien is supposed to have met with Rush Limbaugh to advise him on his 96 presidential aspirations. Can you give us any insight on that?
Absolutely not. I do know that, according to some of the press, that the aliens did endorse both President Bush and... President Clinton.
But how does that mean? You're a pretty serious ufologist. How does that make you feel when you see, like, the Weekly World News saying alien meets with Perot, and then you're afraid that you'll be lumped in with the Weekly World News and Bat Boy and all that
exactly
stuff?
That's exactly the problem, is we're trying to be serious about it.
You got to come on late-night talk shows and just make a bunch of bad jokes.
Absolutely, because you all read that stuff. And
everyone's got their cross to bear, Rob.
And that happens to be ours. But that sort of thing hurts our credibility because, of course, we know those stories aren't true like everybody else does. But by the same token, Jesse Marcel, who was the air intelligence officer at Roswell in 1947, told people in 1978 that he'd handled pieces of debris from an alien spacecraft, and the only newspaper that would print his story was the National Enquirer. Well, of course, nobody believed it because it was the National Enquirer. So that sort of thing does not help us at all.
Well, do you think that, a staff reporter or an editor at the New York Times or Wall Street Journal would look at your book and then be convinced that the evidence is overwhelming, that there is something there, and that this isn't National Enquirer-level journalism and investigation?
I think that we can prove to the satisfaction of any credible journalist that something crashed at Roswell. I mean, it was in the newspapers, as you say. We can also prove that there was a cover-up. General Thomas DuBose, who was the chief of staff of 8th Air Force at the time, July of 1947, told us on videotape that the balloon explanation was a cover story designed specifically to get the reporters off General Ramey's back. So we can prove those two things. That does not lead directly to the conclusion that whatever crash there was of extraterrestrial origin, but I don't think we need to prove that to get the legitimate media interested in it. We can prove the two main premises, that there was a crash of something and there was a cover-up of whatever crashed, and let them run with it from there. I think that if the legitimate journalistic media gives us a fair hearing, that they don't sit back and say, well, flying saucers don't exist, therefore everything you report must be an error in some fashion. But if they give us a legitimate hearing, then they're going to become convinced that something went on there. I mean, the testimony of the people, there's just too many people who are talking about this thing now. There's too much testimony that we have on videotape and audio tape. Edwin Easley, the provost marshal, for example, when I first contacted him in 1990 and talked to him about this and said, finally, that we wanted to talk about the events, and he said, I can't tell you about that. I was sworn to secrecy. Here's a man that was involved in something that took place 43 years earlier, and yet he still felt compelled to keep the secret, and he told me several times in the conversation he couldn't talk about things because he was sworn to secrecy. He later told family members that he had promised the president that he would never talk about it. And he also mentioned to me that it was his belief that what crashed at Roswell was extraterrestrial. We have a great deal of testimony from the people who are on hand and are credible people and are not out there trying to gain their 15 minutes of fame or make a buck on this thing, talking about what they saw.
Kevin?
Yes.
This is Terry Andrews. I'm an associate of Pat Packard's.
Yes.
I think it might be a good idea here to also explain what some of the radar squadrons were picking up prior to the impact.
Well, we do have a testimony from a number of people that there were things going on in southern New Mexico at that time frame, and they had believed originally that it might be a flaw in the radar sets, but sets in different locations, Alamogordo, Roswell, and Albuquerque, were picking up this thing periodically over southern New Mexico. And they actually knew it was down because they had been watching it on radar on July 4th. So there was a great deal of that kind of observational data available to us.
Also, it's you've already discussed documents that you've been able to get a hold of. I think one of the more popular documents that have been released in recent years is the Majestic 12 document, and I think there's been some decent research done on that document. Would you like to explain that for us?
Well, the Majestic 12 document surfaced in the mid-1980s, was released in the late 1980s, and it purported to be a briefing paper for President-elect Eisenhower to tell him about the events in New Mexico. There were four documents, the briefing paper, a memo, an executive order by President Truman, a memo from Cutler, who was a presidential aide, and Eisenhower presidential aide, and to General Nathan Twining, who at the time was chief of staff of the Air Force, suggesting that MJ-12 exists, the Majestic 12. But all the documents seem to have failed the test of time. In other words, there were fatal flaws in them. The entire Majestic 12 thing seems to be fraudulent, that there is actually no evidence that that took place. And what it did was divert our attention from the important investigation of Roswell as researchers began to try to determine whether or not the documents were authentic. If they had been proven to be authentic, then it would have been the smoking gun, proving everything that the UFO community had wanted to believe. Unfortunately, there were many, many flaws in the documents, from the dating format that didn't match the traditional military date of the day, the month, the year, to the rank of Admiral Hillenkoetter, who supposedly was a briefing officer, being wrong. Hillenkoetter wasn't an admiral, but a rear admiral, and of course, people in Dayton familiar with the Air Force knows that is like that being a general. A general is a four-star rank. If he's less than a general, then it's a brigadier general or a major general. It refers to the number of stars worn on the collar. And although they may be addressed verbally as general or admiral, it's not a mistake that an officer at that level would make on a document being presented to the president. So there were a lot of fatal errors in this MJ-12 document that suggested it was fraudulent, and the majority of the UFO community has now rejected it.
Would you care to speculate then where the origin of this document comes? Would you just write it off as disinformation, or is it coming from within the UFO community?
My personal opinion is it came from within the UFO community. My partner, Don, believes that it may have originated as disinformation with the specific purpose of diverting attention from the investigation of Roswell. What's happened to us in the last few years, we started our investigation in 1989, and since that time, a large number of the people we have talked to and fortunately gotten on videotape have since died. General DuBose, for example, died about a year ago. Lewis Rickett, the counterintelligence agent, died about 18 months ago. Edwin Easley died about 18 months ago. And what Don believes is the document was prepared with an eye to diverting attention away from searching for the witnesses who may be able to give some corroboration or additional information, and have the researchers chasing around trying to prove the document authentic while the witnesses were, in essence, dying. So in that respect, it may have failed because we did not allow ourselves to be diverted by the document, but concentrated on research into what happened at Roswell.
All right, Captain Kevin Randall, author of The Truth About the Crash, the UFO crash at Roswell. Say there's someone who's looking to do something on a Saturday night with their sweetheart, and perhaps they'd like to find out more about the Roswell crash. Is there anything they could do, like, say, on an upcoming Saturday night to learn more about it?
Maybe near the university.
Gee, not that I could think of. No.
Okay, thanks for calling. Bye.
Yes, we will be lecturing at the Zimmer
Who's
Auditorium.
Who's we?
On Saturday night at 7 o'clock p.m.
Who's we?
Actually, it's going to be me. I thought it was going to be Don Schmidt and me, but it's going to be me personally.
You'll be at the Zimmer Auditorium on the campus of UC at 7 o'clock Saturday.
That's right.
Are you going to have an overhead projector?
No, I'm going to use a slide projector.
Oh, cool. All right. With a clicker, a remote clicker thing?
I certainly hope so.
Are you going to have one of them little laser things you can point little arrows on your slide?
I was going to buy one of those, but hell, they're $100.
Wow.
I couldn't afford one.
And you don't think the audiences of the Queen City are worth $100? I mean, come on.
Have Pat Packard give you the money. He's rolling in it.
Is that right?
Yeah, he's rolling in it.
Oh, well, if Pat's rolling in it, then I'll just have him buy me one of those suckers.
Well, Captain Kevin Randall, we sure do appreciate you staying up that late in Iowa.
Well, I certainly appreciate the opportunity to come on your show.
Well, all right.
It was more fun than getting dirty.
People in Iowa know a lot about that.
It didn't suck, did it?
Well, we got Roseanne Arnold and Tom Arnold. What can I say?
All right, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Hold on. I want to talk to you off the air.
Okay.
Rob's going to go talk to him off the air. You're tuned in to the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show. I'm Chris.
And I'm Rob.
And our topic tonight is...
Ufology.
UFOs and their significance upon the American populace.
And it's also a pledge week.
Oh, yeah, that's right. We're taking your pledges at 961-8900. As I'm sure you're aware, running a radio station ain't cheap, buddy. And if we're going to keep these microphones working and the tunage cranked up, you're going to have to send us some dough, just like Channel 48.
Okay, but here's what you get if you're just a regular guy. If you pledge to a regular show, here's what you get.
A coffee mug or a T-shirt or an umbrella. But if you pledge to us, you get a slice of pizza, a T-shirt, and an umbrella, and a coffee mug.
For every pledge over $25 made during this episode of the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show, you not only get the very useful ceramic Waif coffee mug, you also get...
Or a T-shirt. Or an umbrella. There's an umbrella right there, and there's a T-shirt right there.
That's 30. 30's a T-shirt.
Uh-huh.
Okay, for $25, you get the coffee mug at any program, but only on Chris and Rob, and only this evening or this morning, however you want to look at it, you get the very spectacular free slice of no anchovies pizza on Ludlow.
Oh, and you can get anything you want on it?
Anything you want on it. One free slice. What is it, like a $3 value, $2.50?
Even like pepperoni?
Yeah.
Really?
Even onion, jalapeno,
cool.
Sausage. So
that is so cool.
Only at Chris and Rob, but only tonight. For $25, you not only get the coffee mug that every show gives away, you also get a no anchovies pizza pie. Give us a call, 961-8900, and make your pledge to Waif.
Yeah, wake up, Jim. Okay, also, if you want to talk to our guest, we have a guest here tonight, don't we?
Right, we sure do.
Terry Endress, an associate member of CUFOS, which stands for...
Center for UFO Studies.
He's here, and he'll be screening calls tonight, and we'll be talking about UFOs. If you've seen one, or if you'd like to see one, or if you know anything about them, or if you have any questions about UFOs, call Terry, and we'll talk.
That number is 749-1444.
Okay, we'll be right back.
Just discovered an important note from space. The Martians plan to throw a dance for all the human race.
After crashed in New Mexico, they are given physical exams. They are made to undergo unusual medical-like procedures, frequently involving the reproductive system. And then they are taken back to where they were to begin with, and their memories, not wiped clean, but at least blocked. About 20% of people remember the next morning that some of the details of what happened. Others remember it months or years later. A lot of people have the memories of family.
This is the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show. I'm Chris.
And if they should bar wars, please let these wars stay.
What's that from?
Bill Murray was the lounge singer. Nick the lounge singer. He did Star Wars. If they should bar wars, please let these Star Wars stay.
I don't remember that. Bill Murray was a genius, wasn't he?
He was. And I'm Rob, by the way.
And the phone number is 749-1444. That's the phone number to go on the air. And you can talk to our special guest, Terry Endress of the Center for UFO Studies. And we're going to be talking about some UFOs here. If you want to make a pledge, the phone number is 961-8900. It's pledge week, so let's get those pledges in.
Voting rights, program guide, and only on Chris and Rob, a free slice of no anchovies pie for every pledge, $25 and above.
961-8900.
Terry Endress, what the heck is the Center for UFO Studies?
Well, it's...
Well, welcome to the show, first of all.
Thanks for
having
me.
We're glad to have you.
Good. The Center for UFO Studies was established by Alan J. Hynek before he died.
Who's he?
He, for 20 years, was the Air Force consultant on UFOs, and when he started that position, he was very skeptical. But over the 20-year span, more and more of the cases were just too good to explain away, and the preponderance of evidence was there, and soon he was one of the few high-profile scientists that would spend some time seriously investigating them.
Is he the guy that invented the thing where you hug the guy and he spits out the food?
No, I'm afraid that's something else. That's Heimlich.
Oh.
Dr. Heimlich, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So what do you guys do? You go to one of these Center for UFO Studies meetings, you sit around, and what do you do?
Well, there are no meetings per se. The Center for UFO Studies is located in Illinois, Evanston, Illinois, and so, you know, it's tough to get to the meetings. But what you try to do is keep in touch with local investigators who may or may not be part of the QFOS organization. But basically, it's a concerted effort by professional, sober-minded individuals who want to take a serious look at an amazing phenomenon.
Hello, Gregory Reese. You're on the air.
Hey,
with Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show. Hold on a second.
Yes.
Well, hold on. Call us. He puts us on hold.
Gregory calls us. He's telling us to hold on
a
second.
No. I said, what's going on, sir?
Okay. Oh.
I said, what's going on, sir?
How you doing, Greg?
Hey, I'm excellent.
Have you ever seen a UFO?
I haven't, but what I did see was I saw the George Carlin show this Sunday. Did everybody see the George Carlin show?
I heard he was supposed to have seen a UFO on that
right.
show. Yeah.
He had a cab trip, like, I guess, 400 miles away, and he saw a UFO.
Mm-hmm.
And when he got back to the place, nobody believed him. I think it was a continuous show.
Right.
And what happened, I guess, on the next show, because I saw this one before, they said it could have been a government cover-up, but
mm-hmm.
at the same time, they was doing some testing. And I wanted to know, how do they work with that? Do they have government cover-ups, or would they be subject to just be doing testing? You know, is it... You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, I believe I do. There does seem to be some activity in Nevada. It's called Area 51, and it's so secret that we've got all kinds of photographs of the
of the layout.
Why is it called Area 51?
Well, that's the designation that the Air Force gives it. But they don't admit that it really exists, even though we have photographs of the layout, of the buildings, of runways, of helicopters, and satellite dishes all over the place.
Do they have an extraterrestrial airport there?
They may. The story goes that there may be some crash saucers there that they're analyzing, whether or not they've actually been successful in translating the technology is debatable. But clearly there's a lot of cover up of military projects right now. There's something called the Aurora, which is again something that's been photographed by numbers of people, but our government won't admit that it exists. But the Soviet Union already had, well, the former Soviet Union already has documents proving that it does exist. So
now, has any UFOs ever crashed in Russia back during the Cold War?
It's a possibility. There are some researchers, I think Paul Stonehill is one of them, who are looking into a lot of the documents that the Russians gathered over the last 40, 50 years, now that there's access to those records. And they're trying to find out if there's any kind of connection there as well.
You're still there, Gregory?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I was trying to listen on the radio what you were saying, and then I got cut off.
That's okay. Fine. Get back in on it. Here you are.
Okay, I got lost for a minute there, but I heard you said something about Russia and spaceships.
Yeah.
I think he answered my question, but at the same time, she was fumbling with the radio, so I couldn't hear everything.
Okay, just to make it brief, the Air Force does, in fact, have secret projects that are involved with high technology that they will not admit, even when there are photographs of the planes and the jets that they're working on. A question was raised here whether there might be some crashed saucers in Russia.
Okay.
We don't know that for certain yet, but there are some researchers that are looking into the declassified Soviet records since the fall of Soviet Union.
So the situation like the George Collins show could actually happen, or
oh, yes.
Is actually happening.
Absolutely.
Oh, that's excellent. I like
that. Hey, Gregory, next time you go to one of them big hip-hopping and happening parties down here in Clifton, walk in the front door, everybody says, Gregory, glad to see you at the party. You say, hey, I just saw a UFO.
You know what? It's funny that you mentioned that, because the Diamond publication is back out. You remember the Diamond Hip-Hop?
Is the Diamond a magazine type of thing that you put together?
Yes, sir.
I've seen it. It's fabulous.
And that's back out now. You can get it at Cowtown, Everybody's Records, Record Arcade, Globes downtown. Look for it in the library downtown.
Ooh, the library's stocking it, huh?
Yeah,
and that's exactly
the
what they
time.
Said as I walked into Cafe Rhythm and Blues, and they said, hey, Greg Reese, what's going on? Well, I didn't tell them I saw a UFO. But I did tell them to look for the Angie Davis show. Now, did you see the flyers down there?
Yeah, Angie Davis. She's doing a show tonight.
Is Angie Davis a hot babe or what?
Is that a hot name? That's a hot name.
She's a hot
babe.
She's got this poster
of herself.
Oh, is she a hot
babe?
Oh, she's...
What do you think?
She's got some jugs.
Looking at the
her.
Picture, what do you think?
I'm telling you, she is
fine.
A honey. She looks mighty fine. You going out with her?
Me?
Yeah.
That would
said,
be a real close encounter, wouldn't it?
Before?
Is that her behind talking behind you?
Yes.
Is it?
She's
well,
interested.
Put her on.
She's interested in HBOs, too. I mean,
Angie Davis's
UFOs also.
Photograph is...
HBO.
I'm sorry, UFOs also.
Yeah, he can't think straight now.
Angela Davis's photograph is plastered all over the WAIF studios here, especially that big one out in the hallway.
Did you like that one?
Oh, you are a honey, babe.
Thank you.
What are you doing this weekend? Don't say going out with Gregory.
Hey, Angie.
Yes.
If somebody wants some grown-up fun for the kid in them, where should they turn?
88.3 WAIF FM tomorrow at 2 to 3:30.
Isn't WJVS on then?
Huh?
Isn't it WJVS then? How did you get the wave show? Isn't the high school kids doing 3:30?
It's the spring break show.
Oh, okay.
I bet it's going to be a hot show, isn't it?
It's going to be a lot of fun, giving away tickets and everything.
Tickets what? To what?
Tickets to the Ramsey Lewis concert at JP's on the 21st.
He's a good piano player.
And your favorite clubs. Well, maybe not yours, but some clubs happening in Cincinnati. I'll
so
be giving away
passes.
So you're
saying Chris and Rob aren't happening?
Huh?
So you're saying Chris and Rob aren't happening?
No, I'm not saying you guys aren't happening, but the places that I think are happening, you may not think are happening.
Well, I think you're happening.
We both think you're happening.
Well, in that case, you
and
might like
and our special guest, Terry Endress, from the Center for UFO Studies, thinks you're happening, too.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
You're welcome.
All right, Angie.
Thanks a lot.
Listen to your show tomorrow at 2
We're going to pledge on the Rob show. What?
Chris and Rob late night talk show.
Oh, listeners, don't forget to pledge on the show.
Okay, great. Thank you.
All right.
Bye-bye.
The phone number here is 749-1444, 749-1444. If you want to make a pledge, 961-8900, we need your pledge. And a big shout-out to No Anchovies.
Yeah, No Anchovies.
All right. Uh-huh.
And special Chris and Rob late night talk show pre-show party tonight from 10 p.m. to midnight.
It was a ruckus party, too. We were playing Pin the Tail on a Donkey.
The joint was packed. Everybody who was anybody was making the scene.
Hello, Emily. You're on the air with Chris and Rob and Terry Andrus from the Center for UFO Studies.
Hello.
Hi, how's it going tonight, Emily?
Oh, pretty good.
Are you going to tune into the Angela Davis show tomorrow?
Yeah, sure.
Great.
I got a question for Terry.
Go ahead.
All right, now, there's lots of portrayals of UFOs on television.
Mm-hmm.
I just got, do you think that they're anywhere near accurate?
I'm sorry, could you repeat the last part of that again?
Do you think they're accurate?
Oh, the pictures that we see?
I mean, like, there's been some pretty great UFOs on TV, like the Great Gazoo and Mork.
Like Flintstones, Great Gazoo.
Oh.
You mean?
Okay, when TV goes ahead and writes a story about UFOs, do I think it's accurate?
Yeah.
And then when they produce it, is it? That depends. It all depends on whether or not the producer wants to get the accurate information across. I don't know if you've seen The X-Files recently.
I watched that show.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's a new show on the Fox Channel, and they do a pretty good show as far as being accurate in representing UFOs and the phenomenon in general. Though I would say most television shows play UFOs for laughs, or in the end they find out that it's just another military secret that's being covered up. If I may expand on this a little bit.
Yeah, sure, go ahead.
It's pretty easy to hoax UFO photos.
A friend, and he was out in the woods one day, and he had an old Army helmet, and he tied a blanket to it. Then he put a rubber band around the blanket. Then he was throwing it up in the air and taking pictures of it. Then the sheriff came and arrested him for being a devil worshiper. You know, he was a UFO hoaxer. He wasn't a devil worshiper.
Only in America. But they're fairly easy to hoax, and so... if you have someone has a UFO photo, you got to have all kinds of witnesses to the event, independent of the photographer. He can't know them. They can't be his friends before anybody can actually take it seriously.
So, Emily, have you ever seen a UFO?
No, I'm still waiting.
She's still waiting.
You're sitting there smoking cigarettes waiting for the UFO to come, right?
Yeah, I'm sitting out here looking out the window and just waiting for those UFOs to come and take me away.
But
I have a question for Terry.
Okay.
If you could pick, like, any portrayal of an alien on television that has ever been, like, from as far back as you've seen, which one do you think would be the most accurate?
I think going back to the movies, it'd be a little more accurate. Have you ever seen Close Encounters of the Third Kind?
Yes, I have.
Okay. From the reports we've gotten from abductees, people who claim to be... taken aboard UFOs by the aliens. The little guys that you see running around Richard Dreyfuss coming off the ship there, those are fairly close. The large oversized head and the large oversized eyes and the diminutive body, the small skinny body. So I think those would probably be the most accurate.
Have you seen an alien?
No, I haven't.
Have you met people that have?
Yes, I have, and they're just plain folks like everyone else. Sometimes the encounter changes them. They become a little more aware of the things around them and environmentally conscious, things like that. But they're just plain folks. They're not asking to be abducted. It just happens to them.
Do the stories sound the same? Are they similar in any ways?
I'm sorry.
Are their stories ever similar? Do two total strangers ever come up with the same story?
Well... there seem to be quite a few common threads in the abductee stories. Typically, they're either taken from their automobiles out in the deserted area or taken from their bedrooms, taken aboard the ship and then subjected to a physical exam of some sort. And pretty much that's the story you get from abductees. After the examination, they're put back either in their car or back to bed. and have very vague memories of what happened, they then start to show anxiety reactions and go seek counseling from a psychologist, and the psychologist hypnotizes them and regresses them to find out the cause for that anxiety, and that's when the abduction story is often recovered. Although it's important to point out that 40% of all abductees remember the event without hypnosis, so we're talking about something a little interesting there.
So in your opinion, do you think that the Great Gazoo was completely made up?
Yeah, the Great Gazoo was just a cartoon character.
Terry, what about the way outs?
The way outs were way out.
What about Mork?
Mork?
Yeah, he's just another fictional character.
What about the, what about My Favorite Martian?
Oh, he's great.
Yeah, he was pretty cool.
I was just trying to think, how did he get his antennas to come out of his head?
I think what they did back then is they had somebody stand behind him and just sort of push the antennas from behind him. They really didn't come out of his head. They were actually behind his head.
Emily, who's your favorite TV alien?
Oh, there's so many. I don't know. There have been too many. I liked a lot on the Jetsons.
Do you?
The Great Gazoo, Mork, all of them. They're just so great. I kind of tend to go for the more fictional. I like the UFOs better that are fictional.
What about Vampire Hookers from Outer Space? How realistic was that movie?
I never saw it, no.
What about Plan 9 from Outer Space?
No, I never. I saw Amazon Women on the Moon.
How realistic was that one?
I don't think it was very realistic.
Go check out Jane Fonda and Barbarella.
I've never seen that. No. I haven't seen many of that movie.
Okay, Emily, let's cut the crap. How big is your pledge?
I already pledged. I hate to tell you, but it was a different show.
Well, you don't get a free slice of pizza then, because if you pledge on the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show, you get a free slice of pizza with your choice of ingredients.
Chris, we've been cuckolded.
But I'm sorry, can't you guys just, like, share my pledge? It wasn't very big.
No, Emily, you went behind her back.
Well,
you cheated on us one last time.
Who else gives a tea swilling, crumpet eating limey like yourself all the airtime they want to talk about the Big Gazoo?
Rob and I do, and we do, and we do, and we do for you, and this is the thanks that we get?
I'm so sorry. Can you forgive me?
We're taking a break. We'll be back in just a minute. If you got a pledge, you get a slice of pie with Chris and Rob. 961.